Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this March the 24th on the West Coast, now March the 25th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. So nice to have you with us this evening. Our guest tonight has been on a bunch of times. Or many times, depending on your use of the English language. He has his own website, educate-yourself.org. He is a researcher, student of metaphysics, also the creator of many metaphysical items, and he's also a journalist, and my good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's great to be on with you again this week.
Well, what's new on your neck of the woods?
Neck
of the woods, I guess.
Well, I like to comment a little bit on the political scene. I heard on the radio late in the afternoon Obama's press conference. And I want to comment a little bit on what's in the news and what we should be paying attention to. If you remember last week when we talked, I brought up to you information about a bill that's making its way through the House very rapidly, which is essentially, it's called H.R. 875 in Senate Bill 425, I think. We have to be concerned with this bill because it is a very sneaky attempt, if you will, to control the growth of food in this country, the growth in distribution of food. It's getting zero coverage in the mainstream media. I've heard nothing on mainstream radio. I've seen nothing on television. It's as if it didn't exist. There's not a word being spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Obama conference today centered on, which is what mainstream centers on, is
spin.
AIG,
yeah.
Stimulus package, etc. Now, it's an outrage. And it's certainly an intentional, orchestrated plan to nosedive the American economy. Many people are aware of this, and many people comment on this, and that's true. And what we're seeing are actors. Obama, of course, is not the president because he's merely posing as a president because he's fraudulently and criminally posing as the president. He's not a U.S. citizen, therefore he's, you know, his swearing in was illegitimate, and his entire presidency is illegitimate. And it kills me whenever I hear people on the radio or TV refer to President Obama. He's the imposter Obama. He's not the president of the United, at least he's not the legitimate legal president of the United States. We in the, you know, an alternative news need to keep on reminding people of that.
If I can interrupt real quickly here, I heard him mention our country, and I thought to myself, my country's not Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know,
so,
he's using these terms, and they're showing him nonstop on TV around the clock just to get you brainwashed into accepting this illegitimate
what I expect to happen is that he'll, as long as he remains alive, not that I wish him harm, but I fear that the Illuminati may plan an assassination of him farther down the road, but as long as he's there, I'm sure nothing will effectively come of the need to have proper hearings and legal action to remove him from office. I'm quite sure that's not going to happen. It's going to be simply ignored and stonewalled, similar to all the other criminal events that had occurred with the previous administration. It's clear by now, I hope to most people, that 9/11 was an inside job. Therefore, Bush and his cabinet and the intelligence service and the military all played a role in being part of that orchestrated sabotage. They're all guilty of crimes. And the 9/11 Commission, of course, is an utter farce, whitewash, far worse than the Warrens Commission whitewash. And yet they got through 8 years with no effective legal action taken against any of those criminals. And I feel that's, realistically, that's probably what's going to happen here. The issue of his illegitimacy will simply never rise to any prominence in any sort of mainstream media. That's for sure. And even in the alternative media, will become so, let's say, immersed in the latest affronts to our assaults on our liberties and the Illuminati's plan, the Rockefeller Rothschild's plan to sink us will become so pressing that people will simply shift their attention to those more pressing topics of the day, and the whole issue of Obama's illegitimacy will simply, you know, not even be raised to much height, even in the alternative, media. So that's just a reality I think we'll have to face. It doesn't mean I or you will not will stop mentioning it. I'll continue to mention it on a regular basis, but I don't expect anything to really come of it, although it should. But so we're facing other concerns while they're prancing the AIG story before our face for a number of weeks now. Now, this is March 24, and he's been in office since January 20th, so this is about 2 months in office. And they're moving very quickly on a number of fronts. And the front that they want us to concentrate on is AIG and the recovery of the country and all this other glad-handing they're passing us, you know, over the boob tube. But what's concerning is me is that there are real efforts now to control the most vital thing to, you know, life itself, food. And this series of bills is not only H.R. 878 we need to be concerned about, but there's other bills. I was just sent a copy of the Blair-Holt bill was introduced in the House on January 6th. This is while the, you know, previous administration was in. Which is the most incredible gun control legislation I've seen to date. And I was just before the show, I was just reading down the articles of it, and it's mind-boggling how difficult they are attempting with this bill to make the ownership and possession of a gun, of a firearm. Now, of course, it's not news to us that they want to outlaw guns in this country. That's the ultimate goal. It always has been. And during the Republican, because of, let's say, the traditional opposition of Republicans to gun control, that part of the Illuminati plan to destroy the country just takes a back seat until they put in the leftist, the Obama imposter in office. And now gun control, more so than ever. Of course, Clinton tried various stages of gun control legislation during his time, but it was effectively kept at bay. But now we have a lot to worry about with gun control in this country. Now, this whole proposition is bill is one paragraph after another refers to licensing, in government requirements under licensing. Therefore, there's a great deal of red tape to do with background checks, to the requirement to register the gun, the requirement of the owner to take safety courses, the requirement of the owner to indicate that the gun, is child-proof in the home, the requirement to notify the government within 24 hours of moving to another address. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on and on ad infinitum. So even if we were foolish enough to knuckle under to these this red tape, even the most, let's say, law-abiding of us are going to have a hard time holding on to a gun because they're just throwing in so many requirements and licensing that you essentially have to walk on eggs. And, of course, they want to know who you are. They want to know what the gun, you have to register the gun, let them know what it is, how much ammunition you got, la-di-da-di-da-di-da. Now, the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution gives the citizens the right to bear and keep arms. And that's what it says. And for many years, the left, starting with the Brady Bill from the mid-80s, remember when Brady, under the Reagan administration, was shot, undoubtedly by a mind-controlled programmed individual, as was Reagan when he was shot.
Oh, yeah. With connections to the Bush family, too.
Yeah, right. So they, all school shootings, Columbine, et cetera, I was just doing a review on what really happened in Columbine a couple days ago. All school shootings are by mind control victims. What we're getting in the media is their loner nuts. That always comes up with all assassins. They're always a lone nut. They're always on some sort of psychotropic medication.
And it's always the fault of the gun. It's not the medication.
Right.
Or the mind control.
Yeah. But the true story is that they're mind control individual, just as the Virginia Tech shooter was a mind control individual. Of course they're taking these psychotropic drugs, yes, and they're also have been hypnotized on a regular basis because all mind control victims are subjected to drugging, hypnosis, and programming. That's the nature of mind control. It's not just the programming. They mix all three together. So what we're getting in the media is we're hearing about the drugs. You don't hear about the hypnosis. And, of course, there's not a word about the mind control programming. But they're all programmed to assassinate people so they can have these big splashy headlines in the news as a pretext for ramping up demands for gun control. This is what happened in England, and this is what happened in Australia and New Zealand. Those murders, the Port Arthur shootings, etc., were by mind control individuals to create this national, this media orchestrated so-called outcry. It's really more a matter that the media is adjusting and pumping the story. Lots of videos of the murder scene, blood, and of course, certainly at the funerals, wailing parents, and et cetera, at the graveside. They would just load the TV and radio with these programs. And then within weeks of burying these kids, this legislation is being rammed through for gun control, which is, what happened in Australia and New Zealand and England. And it will happen here if we continue to just allow these, these Illuminati conspirators to continue to manipulate the media and create public opinion and ram through these laws. So getting back to the Second Amendment, we have a constitutional guarantee to keep and bear arms. Therefore, when this Holt character, I don't know what state he's from, Blair Holt, proposes a series of laws in which we have to essentially get license from the government in order to, you know, get their permission to hold a gun, that's a direct violation of the Second Amendment, a direct violation. They can't be legally proposing laws that are a direct violation of the Constitution. But that's what this guy is doing.
Well, yeah, and he's doing the bidding of Obama and Biden. I tend to think Biden is more behind this than Obama is. Obama's a puppet. And certainly the people he's associated with are all part of this. Why didn't they do this under Bush?
Right.
You know, I mean, or under Clinton? Why is it just occurring now? I mean, you know, this, they're ramping everything up, like you said. They're taking all the rights away. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to say, well, this, I'm not criticizing what you said or how you said it. I'm just saying, you know, this is all happening now. Why? Well, you've got a Democratic Congress and Senate, and you've got a Democratic non-president. You know, I can't call him a president.
Right.
And you know, he probably doesn't even have a party card. Let's see that, you know.
Yeah,
he can't come up with a driver's license or a birth certificate. Yeah. Let's see that, you know. Maybe he's got a ticket to a bowling alley or something that we could look at. I mean, it's ridiculous. But
it is ridiculous. So, anyway, we have to, you know, collectively, everyone who's, you know, part of the alternative information network, need to really concentrate on these bills that are quickly winding their way through Congress. Now,
well, you know what? Let me make a point here, if I can.
Yeah.
And I think this is worth a little bit of discussion.
Okay.
You know, I'm listening to all these laws being created, okay? Congress is coming up with these ideas. They're voting on them. They pass them on to the Senate. The Senate approves them. And then they send them to the president to be signed. Now, none of these laws are actually valid because this guy hasn't proven that he's a U.S. citizen, mm-hmm. a natural-born citizen.
Right.
Okay? It doesn't mean through the process of immigration, which so many other people had to wait 10 years to accomplish. You know, yep. Technically, we should be suing the state of Illinois for allowing this fraud to occur.
Yeah.
You know, originally. We should be suing them and then the federal government. You know, now they can say, well, you can't sue over a political issue. This is much more than a political issue.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, this is a fraud.
It's high crime.
It's forgery.
It's high crime.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and they're all aiding and abetting.
Yes, this. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that we even have to talk about this stuff because this takes your mind off of the fact that he's phony, okay?
Right.
That he's corrupt and he has no being here. A business being here. And what are we talking about? We're talking about, well, you can't make or eat this kind of cheese because it's organic, or you can't eat this tomato, or you can't grow a garden, or you can't protect yourself with a weapon. But nobody's going after the criminals, are they? They're not going after the ones with the guns, and they're not going after the ones stealing the trillions of dollars.
Yes.
You know, you know, this, I don't want to use inappropriate language on my own show, but this is, you know, I understand what you're saying here, and I'm just venting here because this is shouldn't even have to be talked about. You know, if the man from the moon comes here and starts telling us what we can and can't do, we wouldn't listen to why we're listening to this joker.
Right.
Why are we allowing this fraud to be perpetrated on?
Right.
And well, I know I'm preaching to the choir, so.
No, of course, but we have to review it. So, I mean, we have to review the facts. That's why we're, you know, we're having the show because we want to get these ideas out. So whoever might listen to the show, you know, can...
Geez, that's a good idea. Maybe I could start keeping archives, too.
Well, so, yeah, it's for people like myself, like yourself, who have become aware of the New World Order takeover agenda and have been able to see for the past, that, well, in my case, it was from 1994 forward, I recognized or I saw what's really taking place in this country. Once you see the script and the agenda, it's surprising how many people don't see it, and it continues to surprise me. Now, I know there's a lot of, let's say, efforts being orchestrated in the background to keep people dumb. You know, we know that the food additives, the you know, the fluoride in water, etc., electromagnetic transmissions, the ones we know about and the ones we're not told about. There's a great deal of electromagnetic waves being broadcast both on Earth and off Earth that are dumbing people down. Of course, they don't know it, but it is keeping them locked down in a certain, let's say, awareness, or let's say a limited awareness mode, and they have trouble. Now, seeing the wheat from the chaff, I experience this often through email. People oftentimes will just realize that, you know, chemtrails are what my website say they are, and I'll get one of these "oh my god" sort of emails, you know, and I'll get you know, a couple dozen photos of chemtrails, and they say, look at this, I can't believe it, oh my god. But so, you know, and chemtrails have been sprayed daily all over North America since the winter of 97-98, so we are in our 11th year, and yet some people, adults, are just beginning to realize that it's happening. So there's a lot of people who are very much unaware of the depth of the treason we're experiencing, and because there are, frankly, so few people, at least in areas of business, government, etc., that are simply not taking enough action to thwart the event, I'm sort of concerned that, you know, the agenda is going to continue to steamroll forward, and the only way it's going to stop is people have to take action. And by that I mean is the most intelligent action to take is legal action, because that slows down the plan more than any other thing you can do. If you can get enough people organized, particularly people in the legal profession, to mount lawsuits, they tend to get publicity, even if it's only on the internet and on the alternative, you know, websites, and they tend to slow things down. So we really need much more aggressive legal action to throw up roadblocks to this steady, you know, marching forward of the New World Order takeover agenda of the country. And for those politicians like Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut, people in Connecticut have, you know, who are aware of what's going on, are in the best position to put the greatest pressure on Rosa DeLauro. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone else from the country shouldn't be voicing their displeasure with her and the 39 other sponsors. I think they're up to 39 now. Co-sponsors on this food control bill, H.R. 875. But this woman really, her office simply needs to be deluged with email, faxes, phone calls of people just irate beyond words and telling her to withdraw this bill. If she had an intense demonstrations outside her office, this woman can't go home, there's a couple thousand people picketing in front of her home, etc., this woman would back down if the counter pressure were intense enough. She would definitely back down. And then what they need, I don't know what the law is in Connecticut for a recall, but somebody needs to start circulating petitions for a recall. Action is what's going to stop this agenda. And what bothers me more than anything is that, well, yeah, I see articles, about the, well, at least Lynn Cohen Cole, our articles are pretty dead on about this issue. I don't see any action, not to speak of, and that I'm afraid is the thing that's needed the most. So of course, before there's action, people have to become aware of this treason, and that of course that's the reason we're talking. But it does bother me that so few people catch on. You know, they're because of the declining economy, people now are focused on either getting a job if they lost it or holding on to their job. And people are, you know, a lot of people are in a hunkering down mode. Of course, the media has helped a great deal in creating this atmosphere of fear about, you know, the economy. So I feel quite confident that the media intentionally was given the directions to overhype the anxiety, if you will, of the the coming economic collapse, the coming Great Depression, etc., in order to cause the economy to slow down even sooner.
Let me make a comment, if I can, since you brought up the economy and the media's role. I spent all of probably 10 minutes today listening to these hearings that they were conducting in Washington, the so-called AIG hearings. They had Ben Bernanke there, and I don't know the name of this particular senator. He was a Republican, or I should say congressman, Republican congressman from the state of Illinois. And he kept asking the whole panel. Geithner was there, Bernanke was there, and I don't even know who the other yokels were, but they were all lying. Obviously, I mean, we know what's going on. You and I particularly know what's going on here, and I've been reporting it for a number of years. Yeah. I've written about it, and we've talked about it quite a bit on this show, and. He basically asked a question in reference to, let's say, first he brought up the fact that, you know, first it was millions, then it was billions, and now it's trillions. Okay, so I heard one congressman mention trillions, and isn't that the magic figure we've been talking about so much?
Yes.
That they actually, it goes into the quadrillions, too, but... For those listeners out there that aren't real big on financial issues, he brought this up and he extracted a very lame answer from Bernanke. Bernanke's answer to the question was, "You didn't ask a proper question," as if he can't answer that. Now I'm furious. I'm sitting here listening to this crap, and these guys know full well, and this is being orchestrated by Barney Frank too. They know full well what's going on. They've been told, keep the focus on the bonuses, these $165 million bonuses.
Yes.
How can anybody, I don't care what business you're in, you're failing, your business is on the verge of bankruptcy because you've stolen all the money. That's the issue. It's not about anything other than they've stolen the money, and we're talking about trillions of dollars.
Yep.
And they have the audacity to pay themselves an additional $165 million. I don't care where the money came from, but they stole the money that really was part of a big Ponzi scheme anyway. This whole thing, AIG, American International Group, what the hell does that mean? American International. What does that mean?
Right.
That's a holding company. That's an insurance company that's insuring every piece of crap paper that they can think of out of thin air, just like a Federal Reserve note.
Right.
It's all fictitious financing or investment vehicles that they've created to get honest, sincere people that really think that they're going to make a killing on this stuff. They're paying themselves 600 to 800% interest. Well, it's made out of thin air. No wonder they can do that. You see, this is all fictionalized. This is all from playing international ping pong over computer wires with numbers. They're playing games.
Yes.
No papers changing hands. Now, they get to a particular place where they don't want the topic to be heard. And remember, we're hearing or we're seeing and hearing a delay. We're not hearing in this in real time. All of a sudden, CNN goes to a commercial break. I switched to MSNBC. They just went to a commercial break. But they all start first analyzing. Now, they've got Congress investigating this, and these broads that they've hired to be anchors. And I use the term broads because they're not journalists. Okay? They're dressed up like Barbie dolls, got their makeup, got their hair coiffed, and they're acting like they're experts on this stuff, and they haven't reported one lick of the truth for years.
Right.
For 60 years, they haven't reported the truth to the people. And now, all of a sudden, they're experts, and they're going to give us the breakdown of what's going on here? And you can't hear what they're saying. You can't hear their lies, although you know they're going to lie anyway. You see? Are they going to tell the truth? No. They had to stop it. And then CNBC was doing the same thing. And Fox News was doing the same thing. And you go to C-SPAN, and they're playing these one-minute speeches from the Congress about, we need to get the wetlands in this area fixed. And I have people that are standing in line for work. You know, when are we going to get some jobs over here?
Right.
You know,
right.
That crap. There, right. Anything they can do to divert the attention away from the truth, which is they're thieves, and this is, you know, they're assigning us how many thousands of dollars? The first bailout was $30,000. They spent 10 times that easy. Okay? Easily. They spent 10 times that amount of money. So you can figure each one of us is in the hawk for $300,000 over our dead bodies. Oh, they need to be arrested and thrown in jail to rot.
Right.
Period. That's it. I mean, this is outright criminality. And I don't know if you were ready for my rant, but...
No, well, I think it's necessary, Don, because...
Now, tell me that's not orchestrated, you know, that they all go to a commercial break at the same time, right in the middle of the hearing.
Right. Exactly. Right. Of course it's orchestrated. Of course it is. Yeah. And... yeah, I, you know, the last time we were talking, I was mentioning to you that I prefer to talk about issues in a calm state rather than, you know, get upset and get too emotional because...
I'm not upset and I'm not emotional. I'm disgusted.
No, I'm not saying you are. I'm just making the point, though. I want to bring home a point that a normal person, this is the thing, a normal person who's still has his wits about him and does recognize the fraud of what's taking place through the media by elected officials and Senate, you know, House committee on the floor, etc. The fraud is so huge that if you're aware of it, it's natural and normal to be incensed. And when you get angry, but I think it's necessary. I believe if, you know, you get acclimated to the story, you can discuss it more calmly. But we really need many people in this country to become sufficiently aware of the reality of the criminality that's taking place, so they will become incensed enough to take action. This is what we need more than anything. We need an indignant citizenry, really to understand what's going on here. Once you understand, you see, it's not. you know, it would be nice if the thievery were very simplistic to explain. Then it'd be easy for, you know, six-pack Joe to get it, and you can pick it up easy. But unfortunately, the current crop of robber barons in the 21st century aren't as obvious as the robber barons were of, let's say, the late 19th century. They're more sophisticated today, and therefore the thievery is better masked today than it might have been, let's say, 200 years ago.
You know what went through my mind today while I was watching this stuff for the whole 10 minutes that they actually, you know, that I caught it? I'm asking myself, what kind of people are these? I mean, you know, I'm looking at, I ask questions about life. I guess I'm different from the average person. I ask questions like, and I'm sure you've done this, you know, why are we here? Why am I here? What is life about? What is the purpose of life? What am I supposed to do with my life? What is my intention? What constitutes a rich, successful life? What constitutes a legacy, or what constitutes inspiration, inspiring other people? What constitutes leadership? These people have none of these qualities other than they're together. They're one in their corruption. They're one in their evil. And I ask myself about the people in place to do something about this. Everybody in the bank is corrupt. Everybody in the government. That's unfair for me to say everybody in the government, because there are whistleblowers that come out of the government. But is that because they want us to believe that there are people that are really looking at doing things right? Why is it the whistleblowers are always killed? Why is it that that people are so willing to allow this to happen to them? If they ask themselves those questions, I ask myself first, you know, what is life about? Why am I here? Why am I here? Why are we here? We don't ask those questions. We pay so much attention looking at what other people are doing, or ignoring what other people are doing, and not really doing what we would choose to do for ourselves. We're doing what we're told to do. And I know that in answering the question, why am I here, that's not the reason I'm here. I'm not here to have somebody else turn me into a slave or an automaton. I'm right. Sorry. I'm not. That's not why I'm here. That's the aspect of waking up that I don't get with a lot of people. What do they think about if they're not asking them, if they never ask themselves that question? What are they thinking about? What is the purpose of their life?
Okay, well, I believe this is part of the equation. I believe what I'm about to say is what's happening. This is going to take the conversation to another level, but I believe this is what's happening.
Up or down?
Well, it's going to take it to a different level. Well, we can return to, you know, to ground politics in a minute. Yeah. But I believe what's happening, Don, is essentially I believe the human race is being replaced by non-humans who have the capability of physically masking themselves like humans. Now, we've had other shows that we've done in which we've talked about aliens, and at least the sort of folks who read my website and maybe read David Icke's material are savvy to the idea that there are these reptilian alien beings who can mask themselves as a human being. So we call them shapeshifters, and many famous people, including Imposter Obama, I believe, are these shapeshifters. But even, let's say, the normal human who, let's say, doesn't have the full-blown alien takeover, I believe, on a higher plane, in fact, I just got a very interesting letter from a lady in France about a week ago. I haven't put it up yet. But she talks about this phenomena that essentially they're kind of supplanting the human soul with a replacement. And I think this is part of the picture. So those who are, let's say, totally focused on forwarding this agenda, all those in the military, in government service, in law enforcement, in intelligence services, who are...
And Wackenhut.
Yeah, who are, you know, part of this growth of the fascist police state, enslavement of the ordinary citizens, etc. They don't seem to have a conscience, or they don't seem to be concerned about the you know, the negative fallout from all this. And what makes sense is that they're not, you know, they're not exactly fully human beings anymore. I believe their soul matrix, if you want to call it, is being taken over by not a non-human thought form. Now, we know the reptilian group, such as the, including the Greys, have what are called a hive mentality. In other words, they act as a group mind rather than act as independent, you know, individuals. And the, let's say the cooperation that those who are helping to install the New World Order seems to reflect this group effort. I mean, they're certainly acting in league with each other. It's not like they're acting independently. Barney Frank is helping, Chris Dodd is helping install the New World Order just as surely as, you know, Dick Cheney did when he was in office. I mean, they're all working towards the destruction of the United States, and they're setting up these straw men issues, if you will, as pretexts or excuses to dismantle the Constitution, 9/11 being, you know, the best example of that.
Yeah, I would say agree with you and say probably 70% of those in Congress are part of this. And I'm wondering if you could tell us what galaxy you think Barney Frank is from.
Well, I don't know, but you know, I don't know. I just don't know. But I mean, Barney Frank is a disgraceful person. If you really want to know who Barney Frank is, read the Franklin cover-up. You'll find out what kids from Nebraska encountered in the late 80s, early 90s in Washington with Barney Frank. And I'm convinced that a congressional page, his name was Spence, I believe, he was murdered because he knew too much, and he was working for Barney Frank as part of a call boy network that Frank was certainly involved with on some level, because many of these boys party, let's call them, that are reported by the children who are abused in the book The Franklin Cover-Up by John DeCamp, involved the parties which Barney Frank was, you know, a big part of that scene.
Yeah. So when you just think of where all of this leads, and you look for some sanity, you know, it's absurd.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to, you know, throw that out there that I don't. That's the number that I was told a couple of years ago, that about 70% of the Senate are these shape-shifting individuals. They're not quite human beings. That's a high percentage. And I'll just tell you something very interesting. I just came on this by accident. We've mentioned it before, but there are video links posted at YouTube that show various people's face distorting during a broadcast. We see it particularly with people who works for Fox News, reporters, personalities on that Good Morning Show on Fox, Steve, whatever his name is, and the women. So we've seen the pictures. You've seen both the videos and the stills. Well, I just saw a video clip posted at a fundamentalist Christian website that had clips of Oprah Winfrey, and she's essentially arguing with Christian ladies in her audience about, you know, the nature of you know, salvation and so, but the purpose of the clip was that, you know, they wanted to show how Oprah is embracing this idea, well, you know, Jesus isn't the only way to salvation, and of course that's a no-no, you know, with Christian fundamentalists if you say that. So, but in the first, 15, 20 seconds of the clip, I couldn't believe it. Oprah starts breaking up, and I see this, let's say, this manifestation around her head and her upper body. I've seen these, you know, momentary manifestations before. There's some other entity overlaying Oprah, and for a few seconds there, this entity showed up on that video clip.
Yeah, you and I have found that phenomenon in a lot of pictures, haven't we, too?
Oh, yeah.
Stills that we've made from videos or regular still photos.
Right.
We've seen this a number of times.
Yeah.
Including Barack Obama.
Including Barack Obama, right. So I particularly in positions of power and, you know, media access in the government, et cetera, a high percentage of these people are not necessarily human, a very high percentage of them. I've got videos of Nancy Pelosi breaking up, in this, you know, this shape-shifting distortion.
Alan Greenspan, too.
I haven't seen that one, but,
it doesn't
surprise me, because usually the top people are part of this crew, you know, this, crew of infiltrators.
And, you know, just a quick sidelight here, the broadcast that I was talking about today, when they went to this analysis, MSNBC had anchoring this particular in the studio analysis of what was going on in these hearings. They had the wife of Alan Greenspan, Andrea Mitchell.
Andrea Mitchell
was
right.
Actually covering it up. He's one of the biggest crooks ever to walk on the face of the earth.
Well.
And his wife is doing the analysis.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man.
I mean, yes, that is pathetic. I mean, that's really pathetic. His wife is doing the analysis of him, right. But it's...
Most people don't know they're married, you know? That's the thing.
Exactly, right. You know, what is... I've become accustomed to it now, but I want to review it. The level of deception in front of cameras has no bounds. I want to just review, I think I mentioned it last week, but I got to say it again this week. Barney Frank is the most remarkable stand-up comic liar that I've yet seen encounter. Barney Frank was in... Back when they were pushing for it started out as a $750 billion Wall Street bailout. And this was in, you know, September, October, November of 2008. Barney Frank was the guy I saw, him, Chris Dodd, and Chris Shea of Connecticut are the ones that I saw sound clips from most often. These are the ones that the reporters, you know, again and again and again, these are the people who I saw clips of on TV. And what he was saying, Barney Frank particularly, was saying that we have to move on this, we can't stall on this, the country's, you know, whole economic future is hanging in the balance here, that we can't let these major corporations go under, that these credit markets need to be kept viable, healthy, solvent, all those buttons. He was... Above all, him and Chris Dodd were trying to speed this up and ram it through, and you had a handful of Republicans in the House who voted it down the first time they voted on it. And as soon as they did vote that down, hammer came down on all these Republicans very quickly, so that within, I guess it was a week, I think you mentioned, or so, they had another vote, and of course this time they did the right thing. But again, it was Barney Frank who was saying, we've got to do this now, we can't wait on this. It was Barney Frank who was avoiding any questions that had to do with, well, you know, what are the strings that are going with this? What is the taxpayer? No. We gotta get this through because this, you know, he just wanted to ram this through.
And they're talking about a solution to a problem they never honestly disclosed.
Right.
The issue is that they stole money.
Exactly.
And they put it in offshore accounts, and those offshore accounts were frozen, and they needed more cash. And while they were at it, they figured they would put a hurt on us to start making us more enslaved, you see.
Right.
That's the issue. That's what was going on, and that's what wasn't talked about at all.
Right. Fast forward to the last week, you know, the week of March 15th through 23, the same Barney Frank is on the radio and TV complaining about why weren't any, you know, why didn't, you know, we have some sort of control on these bonuses? In other words, the very thing that he went out of his way to sidestep and avoid back in the fall when he was pumping the push this thing through, he's complaining as if someone else was responsible for ramming this thing through. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Stop and think. I'm sorry. I want you to keep that thought. Stop and think for a moment. You're saying bonuses. For what? They just failed.
Exactly.
They failed, and we gave them, or they gave them, or told them that we are going to give them over what amount of our lifetime are we going to give them the money. And what did they do? They stole more money.
Right.
It's not bonuses. Bonuses for what? For failing?
Right.
Or was it for the other coup, the other ripoff? Another ripoff is what the bailout is, and it's what I've been saying it is.
Right.
So continue with your thought.
Yeah,
but that's what you should be talking about. I mean, you know, if you're in the Congress.
Yeah, of course.
How did you come about? What are your profits and what are your losses?
Yes.
Show us on paper. Well, they don't dare do that because then you have to see where they paid their taxes, and they didn't pay any taxes, you see?
Yes.
And then they have to do an audit of the IRS and the Federal Reserve, and they don't want the audit to occur because then it's going to become absolutely crystal clear to anybody that's got half of a peanut in their head for a brain, they'll be able to figure out that they stole some money.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
That's what they should be talking about.
So we're just commenting on what we're observing here.
Yeah.
What we're observing are a large percentage of Congress are criminals, beginning with Obama, and they have engaged in a criminal conspiracy, and that to prevent the public from being aware of any of this, they've created a complete smokescreen to occupy these months as we march ahead, you know, in anticipation of the next false flag deal that they're going to pull, so that they can use that as a pretext to usher in some
martial law,
draconian deal of one sort of another. So they lie without limit. They lie, and I mean, obfuscate is almost a compliment, but they lie without limit. And they presume, they behave as if no one listening to them today remembered what they said 2 months ago, or 3 months ago, or 1 year, or 2 years ago.
Or 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, they just act as if there is no memory whatsoever, as if it doesn't exist, and they're just pretending as if they are exactly, or they did exactly opposite of what they actually did. They're simply going through this enormous... So it's one outrage of criminality piled on top of the next, and it's amazing how few people in the country understand the gravity of the monstrosity of what these crimes we're talking about. The stealing of the nation's money, the citizens' treasure, these outrageous plays they're putting on in front of TV cameras every day.
Yeah, yeah. One of them actually said this makes for good theater.
Yeah.
During this hearing, can you imagine that they said? I can't remember who it was, but he said this makes for good theater.
Yeah.
What kind of comment is that to make?
Right.
Other than that's what it is. They're just following a script.
Right. Right.
How could you take that to mean anything else?
Right.
So yes, I'm in total agreement with you. Absolutely total agreement.
Right.
I have to be the bad guy on this interview, so yeah. I'm being the bad guy.
Well, anyway, I'm just hoping more people who have some money, because you can't get much of a political storm going, you know, unless you spend some money on an organizational level. But my God, there is, besides the, let's say, the middle class and the lower class, people who are carrying the brunt of this assault, you still have a large number of people in the upper class who are not part of the Illuminati. Now, you know, once you get into the very wealthy of this country, then, you know, they're accustomed to rubbing shoulders with people who are, you get this kind of upper crust cabal that will be okay no matter, you know, how deep the country sinks into an economic depression. No matter what happens, if you have enough money, you're going to be safe. You know, you live in a villa in Switzerland because you have the money to go there, or you already have hideaways in different parts of the world, or like the Bush criminals, I forget, 160,000 acres in Paraguay that they he bought using the daughter's name a couple years before he got out of his office. So you can be sure the very wealthy of this country will escape the turmoil that is to come. However, below that, though, you still have people who you would call upper class who aren't part of that deal, who are still loyal Americans, and they have some money. They can't wait to the last moment to try to organize a opposition, because it's going to be too late. Once they pull off the martial law ruse, there is no constitution, there's no courts, there's no media, there's no freedom of the press, there's no internet websites. All that's out the window. Once you have martial law, go ahead, put on your computer, see what shows up there. It's not going to be much. Whatever's on television is going to be controlled, radio is going to be controlled. You know, the whole deal is over once they go to martial law. There is no way to extricate yourself other than, you know, try to shoot it out. And even then, if you're not in an organized situation with, you know, thousands of other people, you know, your chances are going to be pretty slim. Most, you know, let's face it, 99% of the country is not organized into any cohesive militia groups ready to defend themselves. No, they're just ordinary people living in their homes and, you know, trying to keep the bills paid and, you know, get the kids off to school. So if we continue to remain passive, once this takeover gets to that level that they go for the martial law routine, there's not going to be a United States America anymore. It's just going to be transformed into the North American Union in the end. But in the meantime, there's going to be a bloodbath in this country.
Well, I think the issue that people should focus on, and I'm very serious about this, are the RICO statutes, okay? Racketeering, yeah. Influenced, and corrupt organizations.
Yeah. It
comes under the RICO Act.
Right.
You know what the fine is for being convicted of committing any two of 35 crimes in a 10-year period? $25,000 and or 20 years in prison. Now, they're stealing trillions of dollars.
Right.
So do they take these laws very seriously?
Right.
I mean, $25,000. Come on.
Yes, that's chump change.
What did they? We were not racketeering, and we're in debt $30,000.
Right.
Actually, say $300,000 a person
right.
in this country because of the amount of money they've stolen within 2 months, not mm-hmm. counting the other trillions.
Right.
We're talking about real close to $700 trillion. Of bogus
uh-huh.
money.
Uh-huh.
Imagine that now. Now, what is the collateral that's put up? What is the security for that? What is it? It has to be this country.
Yeah,
it has to be everything that we've built.
Yeah.
Everything that to which we've contributed.
Yes.
And not just in the past and not just now, but in the future in that
right.
sense.
Yeah. Well,
this is just organized crime. It's all it is.
Right, right.
They're an enterprise, are they not?
Yes.
And they're in the two-party contract with England that we don't belong to.
Yes, right, exactly, right. Yeah, that's... Okay, so, though, I want to, though, remind us and whoever is listening to this show that there is a tendency when we lay out the degree of criminality that we've been talking about, and the degree of corruption, that people wonder, well, what can I do? And I've said it in writing, but the principle should be this. Individually, we should not cooperate with the tyranny. In other words, if you have a choice, don't cooperate with those who are putting forward this enslavement agenda. For instance, if they attempt to, down the road, under the pretext of the bird flu pandemic, which is, you know, laboratory-created deal to begin with, as all pandemics are, you flat-out refuse to get vaccinated. You simply say, no, I'm not going. I don't care what they say I have to do. I won't cooperate with them, and I won't get vaccinated. And you can extend that to a lot of areas. They will often, I don't know if you remember this, but I recall in the year 2000 census that there was a lot of buzz in the television and radio that was very threatening for people almost telling them that they were going to be arrested unless they cooperated completely in revealing information to census takers. And they wanted to have you have this notion, at least, that anyone who doesn't, you know, answer to the census taker or refuses to, you know, can be fined $5,000, can be imprisoned up to 1 year. They were throwing these threats all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And that incensed me no end. And at the time, I did write a number. Well, I wasn't the only one. Other people also, thankfully, wrote about it. But that was a complete smokescreen. There is no legal requirement to that's punishable either by fines or imprisonment to quote cooperate with a census taker. There is no such requirement, and therefore threatening you with statutory or administrative gobbledygook was simply a lie. And you know, I'm totally opposed to cooperating with the census for instance, because they're asking all kinds of questions now, then, and probably will in 2010 for the census. They have no right to ask. And therefore, I don't cooperate with this imposition of these tyrannical, you know, impositions on my liberty, on my privacy. I don't cooperate with them. I simply refuse to cooperate. And now when it comes to issues of, for instance, the draft, which they will instigate eventually, you don't cooperate. You don't sign up for the draft. You don't go when you call. You do what you have to do to evade it. But, you know, if I was in that position, I'm just speaking for myself, you know, I would not cooperate with the draft. I do whatever I have to do to avoid it, but I wouldn't cooperate with it because I know what's really going on when it comes to the military today. You're just cannon fodder. And I'm not going to participate in that. I'm not going to participate in wars of aggression in the Middle East or in anywhere else in the world. That's not what the country's all about. And when it comes to money, for instance, they're going to crash the dollar. It's just paper. There's nothing backing it up. I don't believe it'll crash, you know, in the very near future, but eventually they'll want to replace it with something similar to the euro. Now, whether it's the Amiro or something else, they'll come up with some substitute script. We don't have to cooperate with that. I read it or heard it on radio. I'm not sure. But the guy who was talking about this issue of when they, you know, crashed the dollar, what are we going to do? He essentially dismissed bartering right off the bat because his notion was, well, it's going to be too difficult for two people to have the exact, you know, exchange need that each of the others need, and that's going to be unworkable. That's not true. I remember quite well in the late 70s and early 80s, there was a growing, you know, I was in an urban area and I was kind of involved in gentrification of neighborhoods, and that's what I was doing for a while. And this phenomena took off there as well as in other parts of the country. There was this growth in interest in bartering labor and services. And what they did is that they had a system you signed up for. Just as an example, let's say I was a carpenter. You know, 1 hour of, you know, my time was worth, you know, so many minutes or hour of, let's say, a dentist time. They had worked out a system that the people who joined felt, well, this is an equitable, you know, distribution of labor. So maybe an hour of a carpenter's time was worth 20 minutes or 30 minutes of a dentist's time. The point is, the people agreed to this exchange, and that you had a passbook, just like a bank savings account, and that as you contributed your labor, it went into this passbook, and then you, in turn, could obtain either a product or labor from another party who was part of the system. And at the time, it was mostly done through telephone networks and through through the mail, but it was growing. I was pretty impressed. I didn't think bartering had risen to such a sophisticated level, but I was shown. And I was just, this is really very valuable. And okay, so today with internet and computer, it's much easier now to organize a bartering system so that if worse comes to worse, and that they crashed a dollar, it's possible they might make even the exchange of gold coins illegal. They did it in the Depression, and they could do it this time.
Yeah.
So everyone who's depending on gold as a form of exchange, they might outlaw that. So now, that if you're caught with gold, they'll take it from you, et cetera.
Yeah. You're bringing up a point that Carl Pearson talks about when he comes on the show, which is his website, myclads.com, where you advertise for tasks that you perform. This is not about jobs per se.
Yes, right.
You know, because a job you do for someone else. You can perform your task.
Right.
And you know, it's also ridiculous to say that the work of a carpenter is a fraction of what the work of a dentist is. What is the dentist going to sit on without the carpenter building the chair? A tooth?
Yes.
That he's extracted?
Yes. I can understand that there is a legitimate argument made, and an hour of time is an hour of time.
Yeah.
And this particular system that I, you know, was shown and looked at had essentially taken the more, let's call it, professional doctoring in dentistry, and they, you know, made that labor time, let's say, more valuable than the labor time of a plumber or carpenter. But it wasn't a huge disparity. Maybe it was a 50%. So let's say a 30-minute of a dentist is equivalent to an hour of a carpenter. It's what I recall at the time. It had that kind of breakdown. It wasn't like 5 minutes of dentistry is worth, you know, an hour of a carpenter. It wasn't that grievous.
Look, I see time as time. You know, saving someone's life, you can save someone's life as being a carpenter just as easily as you can with the doctor. In fact, probably got a better track record.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, for instance, let's say a carpenter, I'm talking about the average carpenter now. Let's say he's working at 30, 35, 40 an hour, 50 an hour, depending on his skill level. That makes a big difference. Depending whether you know, if you're running the company, you're making a lot more than that. But if you're just working for, as a carpenter with a small contracting outfit, you know, you're making 35, 40, 50 bucks an hour in normal times. When times get thin, then you're making 20 an hour and you're happy. But, so I think what they did is they looked at the sort of money that a dentist made in a half hour and what a carpenter made in, you know, and that's how they sort of worked out this deal.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's beside the point. The idea, it's the principle that bartering can work. And if you're down to the wire, in which it's either go along with the New World Order, get the chip under your skin, you know, get in line, get vaccinated, turn in your guns. If it's either that or you don't have any access to their plastic money, because they want, of course, ultimately create the cashless society and control you with a smart card. If you don't want to go there, we can survive in a bartering system. Because what would also happen is that if enough people join this, you get small communities. You can print your own script in a small community. If you're committed to honesty, let's say, and if you can prevent forgery, there's nothing to stop people from printing their own script. You have a community of 10 or 20,000 or 5,000 people, 2,000 people. Say, this script, you know, let's call it as Beantown. A Beantown dollar, you know, has the equivalency of, you know, X, Y, and Z, you know, so we all agree to this, we sign on, then you could circulate your own script. You can do essentially in your own little town what the Rothschilds did, you know, back in Germany when he put up that red sign and exchanged a piece of paper for the gold that his clients were keeping, you know, in storage in his shop.
Yeah.
That's what he did. He gave him a promissory note. This note is worth, you know, so many ounces of your gold. That's how we get paper money. That's how it all began.
And, you know, there are people out there that probably would be very good at that, but they're thinking in their minds, what would I do without the government's help? What would I do if things got difficult? Well, just look at the first half of that statement. The government's not even helping us. How are they helping us? Name one way the government's helping you or me.
No,
And they're supposed to be working for us, you know. The cart's in front of the horse here.
Right. So we're being enslaved by government and in general, at least at the, you know, at the top, you know, upper levels of government. These are the worst possible people you want in charge of your government because they're betraying you to a New World Order agenda.
Yeah.
So no, they're not helping you. They constantly lie to you. They're robbing you.
Yeah, and I'm emphasizing this just to emphasize what you're saying is that you know these are solutions to the problem. These and they're going to be required of you if you determine that you're not going along with this. You do that at the expense of losing your soul, basically.
Yeah.
If you look at it from a spiritual sense.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I couldn't go along with that. But I feel a lot of people, if they understand that you can do it, what the criminal needs is your cooperation more than anything. The whole thing will fall, the whole New World Order, takeover, destruction of this country, will fall like a house of cards if people, the bulk of people, stop cooperating with the takeover agenda. Simply don't cooperate with it. I am not in favor of bloody revolution. I'm in favor of keeping our present government structure intact. What I wish to do is get the criminals out of power who are currently in power and replace them with honest, patriotic citizens who are interested in the welfare of the country.
Yes.
But I don't want a revolution.
No, I'm not saying that at
all. I know you're not saying it, but I get a lot of email in that regard. There, you know, a lot of unthinking people are thinking the answer is to just, you know, chuck this whole thing and start again from scratch. That is not the answer. We won't do it on this show, but on another show, we're going to go into details of what happened in the French Revolution.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see that happen in this country. We got to be careful. We have to be careful. Young people particularly don't know history. They don't know the way human course of events unwind when you take the cork, you know, out of the champagne bottle.
Ken, I want to ask you a question. Do you see a confrontation of spiritual nature here? Do you see the so-called good of the spirit realm and the evil of the spirit realm?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's no question. That is the bigger picture. That is the picture. That's the picture. It's a battle of principalities. And it is good versus evil. There's no question about it. If we allow the dark forces to succeed, they're going to do more than take over just the United States. They're going to take over the entire planet. It'll become an enslaved planet. That's the goal. That's the goal. That's where we get into the reptilian overlord deals.
Mm-hmm.
They want to take over. They've taken over other planets. This is not the first planet they've tried this routine on.
Yeah.
They've taken over other planets and made them completely enslaved, mind-controlled, misery, planets. Plus, they want to reduce the population by about 90% to boot.
Which brings us back to that rhetorical question I asked before. Why are we here? You know, why? If you can ask yourself that question, why am I here? And say, well, it's not to pay any attention to any of this stuff, then you don't know why you're here.
Right. Well,
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I have an answer for that. I mean, a lot of people do who are, you know, who, it's about a spiritual schoolhouse, and we're in the midst of this physicality in order to acquire spiritual lessons. That's the general answer. Now, specifically, we were born, at the time we were born, to participate in this event at this time. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been born at this time. If it was our place to, you know, experience 18th century America or 19th century America, we would have been, maybe we did come through at that time. I don't know. But we're alive now because we're supposed to be here now. So everyone who's alive on the planet is supposed to be here now, because we're engaged in a play. And depending on how you behave or how you conduct yourself during this play, your future lives will be, you know, affected up or down.
Do you ever feel like you're sitting in the balcony watching the play?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I'm not certainly not in the driver's seat. I'm an observer, and I comment on what I observe and what I perceive to be going on. But yeah, of course, I'm a spectator. I don't particularly want to be in the limelight per se. I'm happy just to organize the peanut gallery. That's good enough. grandiose plans.
And what's funny about it is that when you come home from the play, all you have to do is hit your remote control, and you've got a box that is an endless stream of all kinds of plays, isn't it?
Yes.
It's just constant mind control, isn't it?
Yes.
Every aspect.
Yes. Well, thank you for bringing it up. As you know, the new date for the changeover to high definition TV is June 12th. So on June 12th, my screen is going to, you know, my television screen, which I receive, pictures from a set of rabbit ear antennas on top of the TV. I'll just see white snow on every channel. That's okay. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to play videotapes. I'm going to play DVDs of things that I've already recorded, of things that I'm going to obtain. And I won't be lacking for entertainment. In fact, most of the time my wife and I watch tapes that are recorded in Japan anyway, because Japanese TV is infinitely more interesting, entertaining, decent, funny, than much more so than this, you know, this utter wasteland we see in American TV. When I'm watching TV, I'm desperately hunting to find something interesting. I like science. I like history. So on public TV, those shows that aren't brainwashing me, you know, typically Frontline and so forth is a brainwashing operation. But I truly love science and history and serious drama. I'm sort of a serious person. I get, but at the same time, I like humor too. I find humor very life affirming, and it makes life worthwhile.
You know, so I talk to Christians sometimes. They say, you know, you shouldn't laugh about this or laugh about that. And I tell them, God even has a sense of humor. And they say, how would you know that? And I say, well, he invented man.
Yes, right.
You know, so.
Exactly.
And aliens.
Right. So, I wish we had the quality of TV, you know, we used to have 30, 40, 50 years ago. The humor was far more funny. I mean, people like Steve Allen or Jackie Gleason, and even though it was, you know, broad humor, it was just, you know, it was honest humor. It wasn't mean humor. It wasn't foul, gutter humor. It was just, foibles of, you know, man's conduct type of humor. I used to get a terrific kick out of it. The Red Skelton, and gee, I remember all those guys, you know, from earlier eras in television. And it was just honest, clean, honest humor. I really enjoyed it. So it's kind of hard today to find good humor. I'm not...
Watch C-SPAN. Watch the congressional hearing.
Well, that's a different type of humor, but, you know.
dark humor.
But. It's a very dark, you know, kind of clownish type of humor. But anyway, I'll write about it, you know, in the months leading up to and after June 12th, but it's going to be fine with me, and I'm hoping that a large number of people join in with me. Don't get your conversion box. I just got something in the mail for a coupon for the conversion box. I'm not going to get a conversion box. I'm not going to go to digital TV because you're essentially inviting high-tech mind control right into your living room. Truat came out with a very good article in December. I put on my website called The Sound of Silence, in which he goes into a very dark aspect of this high-definition TV conversion that I had not broached. I was concerned about monitoring and surveillance, so forth, which is still a genuine concern because these both cameras and microphones have been discovered in some of these conversion boxes. But I know that the now with the high-definition plasma TVs, high-definition computer monitors, LCD monitors, there's cameras buried in the screen itself, so they can view you and hear you through the screen, whether the TV is on or off. We've known for decades that they can listen to your conversation in your house through your phone, even when the phone was on the cradle on a landline. We knew that. I knew that 15, 18 years ago. And they had that, you know, it didn't start then. It probably started in the late 70s, early 80s, the technology. So they could, you know, NSA could listen in on your conversations. But now with satellites, snooper satellites can see right through roofs. We are being monitored like you have, you know, most people don't understand how totally you're being surveilled and monitored. And then now at the next stage, this high-definition TV, all digital, is a cover for mind control technology that Truot talked about in his Sound of Silence essay. So you don't want to allow this technology into your home, so you just scrap it. Now, I'm hoping it's going to be amusing to see anyway. What will happen is that when they make the conversion, just guessing at this point, let's say suddenly they have a drop in 25 or 30%. You know, they did have these Arbitron ratings, people who, you know, are part of this Arbitron monitoring deal. They find out which programs they're watching. It's usually, by the way, done in lower class neighborhoods where these Arbitron.
Yeah, they get paid to do that, too.
They're getting paid to do that. But they usually shoot for lower-class people. They want to focus on them as the, you know. So when you get, quote, ratings for either television or radio show, well, these ratings are coming from people whose, you know, TV sets are monitored, what channel they're on, how long they're on this channel, etc. That's how they get the ratings. That's how they find out how many people are listening to a show. Okay, so what I believe might happen is that when this June 12th thing rolls around, they're going to get a huge drop in TV attendance. I think it'll show up in Arbitron, but in other ways, like let's say sales revenue will start falling off for certain advertisers who advertise on TV and radio, and they're going to see a big drop in revenues from sales. This will tell them. Now, of course, none of this will be announced, you know, on mainstream. They're certainly not going to say, whoa, this, no. It's all going to be hush-hush, but the people in the industry will see it. And I have the feeling that advertisers, when they see this big drop in sales, will start saying, hey, it's very possible they will force a return to analog. I'm just guessing, of course, they might just stick with the digital and not revert back to analog. But I just have the feeling that if enough people don't go digital, simply don't cooperate, they lose enough money, they lose enough people watching this mind-controlled boob tube, even in the analog form, even the controllers themselves will say, hey, listen, we just lost 30% of our boobs. You know, who aren't listening to us anymore. We got to get them back. They might revert back to analog and have a dual system, which, of course, they're capable of doing even now. They just don't want to do that, or they don't want to tell you they can do that. But we can have a dual analog and HD. In fact, it's going on right now. These channels that are broadcasting in HD, well, if you have an HD set, an antenna system, then you're getting HD. So they're doing the dual thing now. But when they stop it on June 12th, I'm just curious is after 2, 3, 4, 5 months, if they might be a reversion back to analog. I'm going to be very curious to see if that happens. If it doesn't happen, it's okay. Because I'm going to continue to encourage people to, here's a new growth area. People can record shows, let's say on a DVD, from even an HD source, and then start a website in which your, whatever your favorite shows are of X, Y, and Z, you can just like this, what's it called, FlexNet? I think that's it. You can get a DVD for, it's just $10 a month, $15 a month service, and you can, have three DVDs, and when you send them back, you get another three, whatever that. Well, this could happen with television programs. If you're particularly, you enjoy X, Y, and Z, you don't want the HD, you can get a recording of it. And that could be a growth industry. The idea is to not cooperate.
Yeah.
Not cooperate. And I feel if enough people don't cooperate, they're gonna revert. Just like they changed the date from February 17th to June 12th.
Yeah.
Enough people weren't on board. Now, what did they say in the news? They said 6 to 8% of the country doesn't have conversion. That's what the news saying. That's what, I heard on NPR, I heard,
That's what they're saying, but that doesn't
exactly.
mean that that's
you
the
and
case.
I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah.
I think that this is more like 40% didn't yeah. have the conversion boxes. But they weren't going to admit that. So trust me, when this June 12th thing happens, we're never going to hear the real numbers. There's not going to be a word. But if they go back to a dual system with analog, it's because of the reasons I just said here. Not enough people got on board.
Yeah. Well, listen, Ken, we're out of time. Okay. I'd like to continue this. I'm sure we could for a couple more hours.
Oh, this is enough.
Yeah. But you'll be on again. And
yeah, I look forward to it. I really do enjoy these chats.
We can certainly carry this a bit further, too, and talk about what they intend to use the technology for. Next time, though, not tonight.
Okay.
Okay. So, thanks for being on the show. I want to encourage the listening audience to visit your website, educate-yourself.org, and be part of the 3.61 million people that paid your site a visit this past January.
Yes, thank you.
That's a huge number.
Yeah, I was really pleased to see that.
So I want to thank you, and it's time to say goodnight to the listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Mr. Ken Adachi. Again, visit his website at educate-yourself.org. You can also see some pictures that Ken took of chemtrails on my website, directlightproductions.com. And I've actually got a chemtrails page there, believe it or not. A lot of pictures, a lot of proof that this is going on.
Yes.
Special thanks to Doug and Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow night when my special guest will be Mr. Peter Kayander. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light. And have a good night.